We are proceeding with our seminar on five essential items of devotional service that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends for the development of love of Godhead. We have passed through satsanga, Krishna seva, and this evening we are going to look at the third item, which is Bhagavat. So when we consider one of the most often quoted verses concerning the Srimad Bhagavatam, then we see in this verse the previous two items. So this verse I'm speaking of is Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavat Uttamat Sloki Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. So this verse is talking about Seva, which was yesterday's item, and Seva to Bhagavat, which means, of course, Srimad Bhagavatam, that is that will be our principal focus this evening. But as I think you know, besides the what is known as the Bhagavat Shtanam, the book Bhagavatam or non-moving Bhagavatam, that's the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavata, the pure devotee of the Lord, who moves about to preach Srimad Bhagavatam. So this verse is actually indicating both. So then we are again reminded of satsanga, and this is a natural progression, that in order to receive the Srimad Bhagavatam, we must hear it from the Bhagavata, the pure devotee of the Lord. We must have his sangha. And as we explained yesterday, or actually the day before yesterday, because we weren't here yesterday, in the sangha of pure devotee of the Lord is not just sitting around and looking at one another and having some casual conversation about the weather or something like that. We actually see this very clearly in Bhagavad Gita, that Krishna and Arjuna, before the Gita unfolds, they had such a relationship in friendly sakya rasa. But when Arjuna became doubtful about his dharma, about what he should do there on the field of Kurukshetra, then he turned to Krishna as a disciple to a guru, and Prabhupada writes, at that point all friendly talks ended, and now the discussion was focused on Krishna consciousness. So this Krishna consciousness, Krishna seva, then this is the result of sadhu sangha. So now we are in this seminar on Bhagavata, the Srimad Bhagavatam. We are going to learn more about the specifics of Krishna Seva. What does Krishna Seva mean in terms of Srimad Bhagavatam? Because there is Laukika, this word Laukika means commonplace, ordinary, conventional in worldly society. One can see Krishna Seva going on like that if you go to India and are there for the major holy days, Vaishnava holy days, Janmashtami, and Govardhana Puja. So you will see Krishna Seva in abundance. Many people will be rendering some formal service to Krishna, but that does not necessarily mean it is as ordained in Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is the Bhagavat Vidhi, the Bhagavat method of service to Krishna. So Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu, this verse is declaring that we have in our heart Abhadra, inauspicious things, dirt, material desire, sanskaras, impressions from so much past karma, all of that is in the heart. And this is our bandhana, this is our bondage. So that we are, we may, as I say, in this laukika fashion, this conventional fashion, in this, if one is a Hindu, one may try to serve Krishna. But if one doesn't know how to rid the heart of these abhadras, then even though that you may do that service, and of course the service is always good, but it will be very difficult to come to the transcendental platform and stay there, be situated there. So if we're still under the influence of the modes of material nature, yes, we may come up to the mode of goodness and in that status be able to do something that, that approaches pure devotional service. But then when Rajagun rises up in the heart, Tamagun rises up in the heart, we may be cast down again from devotional service into some other materialistic engagement. And so this is the unsteady condition of the living entity. So this seva, this is the same thing. Monk yoga, vicharina, bhakti yoga, the same thing. Avivicharina means that one should not fall down, one should not deviate from devotional service. Krishna is declaring this in Gita, 14th chapter. Mamcha yoga vicharina, without deviation, without falling down, without giving up. One should render devotional service to me, that means steady devotional service. That way, sakadansamati ketam, brahmabhuyaya kalpate, one will come to the transcendental platform. So this is what Bhagavad Dharma is about. This is what the Bhagavad Didi is presenting to us, the transcendental level of devotional service. So, satsanga, Krishna seva, then they must come to this platform, the transcendental platform. So, nasta prayesho bhadresho, we can rid the heart of these dirty things by nityam bhagavata. Sevya, nityam, literally means always, eternally. But in our case here, in this material world where we have to do so many things, then it at least means regularly. Like in the morning we have our regular Srimad Bhagavatam class. But it's not simply that we're auditing this class. You know, this word auditing means like if you go to university to hear a professor, maybe a famous professor, gives very nice classes on a subject. So you go to the university to sit in the class and hear, but you're not enrolled. So you don't get credit, you see. So this is also not the point. The hearing of the Bhagavatam in the morning, then the consequence of that hearing should extend to all of our activities the rest of the day. We should be working for credit in the Bhagavad Dharma, you see, and with the Bhagavad class showing the way. Nityam Bhagavata Sevya. And of course, again, Bhagavata Sevya means to serve the pure devotee who is speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam. But that we have already covered in Satsanga. Today we actually want to focus on the book of Bhagavatam. So, Nityam Bhagavata Sevya. Then in this way, yes, almost completely, by this process, all the dirty things are removed and one becomes established. Bhakti Bhavati Naishiki. Bhagavati Uttamash Loke, that's an important point. The Bhagavatam, this Bhagavatam is full of wonderful glorifications. Uttama shloka means the best of shlokas, the best of verses which glorify the personality of God in soul. This is, as another verse says, this is very pleasing to the heart. And Krit Karna, to the heart and to the ear, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is nectar. At the same time, it is medicine. Generally, medicine is not nectar. You see? But this medicine is nectar. So one hears and enjoys hearing, but at the same time, the heart is becoming cleansed of our disease, our material disease. And yes, almost to nil, it says. This way, bhakti bhavati naishthiti. One can become steady, nishta, fixed up on the steady platform in devotional service. Now the question will be, why does it say almost to nil? Because that which is left over, that is the mercy of Krishna. What's being described here is a process by which we do. This verse is saying what you must do. This is within your human possibilities that you can regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam and purify your heart so that you come to the platform of steadiness and devotional service. But the rest of it, and then we refer to Srila Rupa Goswami's gradation of advancement. So beyond Nishta, then there is Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, and Prema. So these are actually transcendental stages. The Nishta is the threshold of transcendence. Nishta means one will not be disturbed by the modes of nature. One will be steady. And then Ruchi, positive taste, Asakti, attachment, Bhava, ecstasy, Prema, pure love. And these are further steps into the realm of transcendental Krishna consciousness. And these come, and this is, you see, Srila Prabhupada's position on this subject. These come by Krishna's mercy. We should come to the platform of Nishta and go on engaging in devotional service. And then Krishna will do the rest. There are those who say, no, there are things we can do to take those further steps, but this, at least we can say, was not the position of our founders, right? His position was, you know, if you do these processes, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, following the Vedic principles, and engaging in the mission of the holy name of this world, the Sankirtan mission, as it is given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then these activities will satisfy Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is so easily satisfied by those who take up his movement. And then by his grace, one will be blessed by these further stages. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam, yes, and another verse, Pravishta Karna Randvena Sanam Bhava Surobhuam. Junati Samalam Krishna Yatarasha Vilasya Sharat. Another verse from 2nd canto, saying much the same as Nathapraishu, Bhadraishu, but specifically mentioning Krishna by name. This verse is saying that the Bhagavatam is an incarnation of Krishna, directly Krishna avatar. Avatar in the form of these 18,000 shlokas. So this Krishna, just as he 5,000 years ago came into this material world to display his pastimes in Vrindavan, so by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, this same Krishna, he incarnates, he takes avatar through the ear hole, Krishna Karna, Randrena, through the hole of the ear. He comes in. He goes down to the heart of the devotee. And Bhava Suruva, there, was there, and then the eternal loving relationship, that potential relationship that we all have with Krishna, by his grace, is manifested there. But not at the first stage. First, do not teach him alone Krishna. First, all the dirt that's there in the heart has to go. But Krishna coming there, you see, Krishna is the purest of the pure. He will not go to a dirty place. So by him just entering the heart, that means all the dirt must go. And then when he is established there, on the lotus of the heart, that lotus unfolds. And as it unfolds, the bhava of our eternal relationship with Krishna becomes manifest. All by this one process, during the Srimad Bhagavatam. So there's actually so many verses in Bhagavatam that are instructing us. From Bhakti Yoga Paribhava, this is another verse. Asei Shrutekshita. So Shrutekshita, he is seen through the ears. By those who are from Bhakti Yoga Paribhavana. Paribhavana means with bhava, with their fully dedicated heart, with the attention of love, those who render devotional service in that way, and then they're able to see Krishna through the ears in the heart. So many persons could be cited. So then let us now turn to the essential philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavat Tattva means philosophy. It means Krishna. But Krishna as what? What was Srila Vyasadeva's intention of writing Srimad Bhagavatam? That's what I'm telling you. Well, let me rephrase the question. What is the Bhagavatam? This is very easy. What is the Bhagavatam, the commentary on?
Vedanta Sutra.
So the Vedanta Sutra is the philosophical culmination of the whole of the Veda. So Veda itself covers so many meanings on actually all possible subject matters. Anything that can be conceived by the most intelligent brain in the world, right? You see, even now in the Western world, everybody churn up so many subject matters. But actually, one will be able to find somewhere other in the Vedas some comment on that subject matter, some explanation of that subject matter from a Vedic point of view, maybe from a very different point of view, one that people today cannot even really understand. But still, the subject is there. So Vedic texts are so vast, that encyclopedia. And so Vedanta means what the point of it all is. And so therefore, Srila Vyasadeva, he wrote Vedanta Sutra, and he wrote also Upanishad, they're considered Vedanta literature. And Bhagavad Gita too, Gita Upanishad. It's the Prasanna Chaya of Vedanta. So, but this is, as we can see, even Mayavadis, they take to Vedanta, they interpret it in some other way, not coming to the point of Bhagavan Sri Krishna. So just leaving it in the abstract realm of intellectualism, that was not enough. That's why Sripada Narada Muni came to instruct Srila Vyasadeva further, that your work is not complete until you directly glorify the personality of Godhead. So, therefore, this is glorification of Krishna. This is presentation of Krishna's nama, guna, rupa, lila. In reference to Vedanta Sutra, it is a commentary, of natural commentary in Vedanta Sutra. So, therefore, philosophy is there. And it's very interesting to study the Srimad Bhagavatam in that light. Because in so many verses of the Bhagavatam, one finds the language of the Upanishads. One finds the philosophical terminology of the Upanishads. So Bhagavatam is always explicating, even in the midst of Krishna's text. Even in the 10th canto, you'll find some reference to the Upanishad. So then we need to know. So what is that philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam? What is it in essence? So this We are meeting in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Ramaji, is rewarded by the Lord for his full day of penance, 4,300,000,000 years of meditation and austerity Ramadev underwent. This was right after he appeared on the lotus, and first he did some, as Prabhupada says, his mind went through all the speculations that modern scientists are still, you know, trying to figure out. Because he's the most intelligent jiva. He went through all that just in his first moments. And even he tried by pratyaksha, by direct perception, to find out what his origin by climbing down a lotus stem, but he never reached the end of it. Because that lotus stem, it goes down to Vishnu, of course, who is Ananta. His nature is Ananta, endless. He could not reach the end. Instead, he heard the words tapa, tapa, and the what's known as the Gopal Gayatri, Kama Gayatri. And then he went back and performed austerity, meditation, introspection for one of his full days, and was rewarded by the Lord at the end with direct darshan of the personality of God. So, at that time, when Krishna appeared, he instructed Brahma. Instructed four verses. They're called, Prabhupada calls them the nutshell verses, Chaturshloki Bhagavatam. And these are expressing the essence of the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam. So the first one, Evasam Eda Keva Re Nanya Yad Sarasatamaram. So here Krishna is saying that before creation, because this is the time of creation, so this is the relevance. Krishna has appeared through Brahma, who his duty is to create the universe. And already, as I was explaining just recently in the last Bhagavatam class, I gave other classes also about the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Sarga, Visarga, these are the first two topics. So, Sarga means the creation of the Lord. So, the universe itself, as a shell of material energy, was there. And half of it was already filled with the Garbhodaka ocean. The lotus was there. The lotus is actually the subtle form, Shukshma Virat, subtle form of the universe. So all of that had been done already by the Lord. Now it is the time for Visarga. This is the second stage of creation. This is what Brahma does. So we are right on that point. You see? So the circumstance is creation. This is what's on Brahma's mind. So the Lord begins at this on this subject. He says that before creation, before even this universe was here, before it came out of the body of Mahavishnu, there was only I. There was only myself. Aham. Evasam Eva Re. And after creation, that means more than 300 trillion years from now, Rama, at the end of your life, when this universe dissolves, then there also will be only I. So, just like in the Bible, God is declared as the Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. So, this is the meaning of Aham Evasam Eva Re. This verse is declaring the same of Krishna. So, that was the beginning and the end, but what about in between? So, Pratyetam Yat Pratyeta Na Pratyeta Chatmani. Now, Krishna speaks about the in between. And he declares that whatever you see in this world, in this creation, that appears real but is separate from me, and that is Maya. And he gives an analogy, which means that it is just like a reflection in the darkness. If one is in a dark place and has a flashlight, and there is a glass surface, a shiny surface somewhere up ahead. So when we point the flashlight at that, then we will see, it will appear to us that someone in front of us also has a flashlight, a torch. And so we may become scared or something. We may react in some way, either become very elated, oh, there's someone else here, or very scared, there's not supposed to be someone else here. Who is that? So, and that is Maya, because actually there's no one else there. It's just a reflection in the darkness. So Krishna gives this example. That anything you think that is separate from, and think of this analogy. Why do we become so emotionally worked up when we see that flashlight? We think it's separate from me. We think that it's someone else. And that's either scaring us or making us surprised in some way, happy, maybe. But we're an illusion because we think it is someone else. But it's nobody else, just me. So Krishna is speaking of himself. All the other selves, we have to follow behind Krishna. Prabhupada stresses this very much in the Mayavadis. They try to, there's this expression, make hay while the sun is shining. So they try to make a lot of hay out of this Mayavadi. This is everybody, this is all you can, it's you, Ashwaharu, you also, whatever we see is Ashwaharu only. No, this aham means Krishna. And the little jiva cannot say this. So, to think, if we think that there is something else, something that is not Krishna, and it is real, then that is Maya. So you really see from this verse what Maya is. This in Maya in the sense of illusion. Maya in the sense of illusion is something we create. How many times did Prabhupada say that? Now that we can point the finger of blame at Krishna, as some have done. Well, Krishna made this Maya, and this Maya is too strong for me. No, actually this Maya as an illusion, this is our own creation. Because we make this foolish mistake, thinking that there is something else besides Krishna. When nothing, the point is, nothing is separate from Krishna. So it doesn't mean that this world does not exist. It means this world exists, but it's Krishna's energy. And that's the other sense of Maya, it's energy. So in that sense, then Maya is real. Krishna is Shaktiman, and Shakti, that is reality. But our conception of this Shakti, that is the Shakti. Because we are seeing it as if it is separate from Krishna. And then the thing about Krishna's energy, it is so perfect that it is the energy of Krishna. Prabhupada once said in the lecture that this Maya is Krishna's energy. So that means she is just as powerful as Krishna, because she is an energy. So just as Krishna knows everything about us, so Maya knows everything about us. Prabhupada actually said both Krishna and his energy are in our heart. It's not just Paramatma standing, alone, but his Shakti is there too. So, as he is seeing the jiva, she is seeing the jiva. So, as soon as this illusion on our part is detected, which is actually masculine. It's not just an accident that we're seeing Krishna's energy separate from him. We want to see it separate because we want to be enjoyed. We want that energy to be ours. So as soon as that attitude is detected, then his energy is also manifesting this material, let us say, drama. Actually, that's a term used, Vyavahar Lila, the Lila of material existence. Krishna's energy is really spiritual, but he will act material for those who are materialistic. So acting material, acting as Durga, then she's placing Bolivia in distress and suffering. So that is the response of this energy to our illusion. You want to be an illusion? All right. So then she presents an illusion for us. So this is the second of the chapter slok. This verse is about what's in between the beginning and the end. In other words, this is also Krishna. But if we're not seeing that, then we're in mind. That's the point. Then, yata-manti-bhutani. Yes, yata mahanti bhutan. Yes, and the material elements, this is an example Krishna gives. In this greater universe, there is a cosmic display of material elements, the eight elements, earth, water, fire, air, mind, intelligence, all secret. So that is always there on the cosmic scale. But these same material elements, they comprise this body. So the material elements enter this body, yet at the same time, they're outside. And so Krishna says, in the same way, I enter this material world. Again, I with my energy, if I enter this material world. But at the same time, I am outside. So, and he makes the same point in 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that because Krishna is coming into this world, then we should not think that he is like us, bound by this world, that he is subject to the conditions of the world. You see, that, oh yes, this material universe is a great shell of elements, elemental energy, and inside is all dark. So the Lord, when he comes in as Gaurudam Krishna Vishnu, Chirudam Krishna Vishnu, he is also in darkness like the rest of us.
No.
So he gives this is an interesting example, scientific example, shall we say. Just as the elements are out there on the cosmic scale, unlimitedly so. How much air is up there? How much water, gaseous energy, liquid energy is out there in the universe? We cannot calculate how much. Now, some is also here. So it's foolish to think it's all here. Some total of earth or fire or water or whatever is in this mind body. That will be very soon. Yeah, so then Krishna concludes. He's talking about inquiry. Etavan eva jigyashu. That Brahma, you must inquire in a very, very exacting manner about this essential truth that I have taught you in these verses. And Prabhupada translates, up to this, inquire up to this. Up to this means up to the personality of God who is standing before Brahma. Directly and indirectly. Directly means, yes, there is that direct darshan of the Lord, and indirect means there is this energetic manifestation. But all of this, as he has explained, is simply himself. Directly or indirectly. So, in essence, what these four verses are expressing is the philosophy of Achincha Abheda Veda Tattva. Simultaneous, inconceivable, oneness and difference of the Lord, which is energy. So, this is the essential philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam, and this is the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. And this is why the Srimad Bhagavatam is so essential to the movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, Mahaprabhu has also explained the Srimad Bhagavatam in terms of sambandha, obhideya, and prayojan. So this is just as important. We need to understand the Bhagavatam as a Achincha Abheda Veda Tattva. We need to understand the Bhagavatam as sambandha, the knowledge, sambandha jnana, the knowledge that connects us to Krishna. Then avidya is the knowledge of the function, our functional relationship with Krishna. And prayojana means the fulfillment of the need of the living entity, his eternal and essential need. So the sambandha vadanti tattva jnanam advayam rameti paramatmeti bhagavati tishabhyate. This is expressing sambandha jnanam, the knowledge by which we are connected with Krishna. So this verse is explaining that in approaching the Lord, one goes through first Brahman realization. And this Brahman, of course, everyone knows, impersonal Brahman, Brahma Jyoti. But there's first, even before that, Mahabrahma, term used in 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Material energy is also known as Brahman. So, as we were just explaining, that is a feature of Krishna too. And therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, for instance, in the 10th chapter, Opulence of the Absolute, he's teaching Arjuna how he can be seen, how he can be understood in the material manifestation of mountains, I am the Himalayas, of fishes, I am the shark. These are different ways of sacred syllables, I am Om. So these different ways in this material world, we can be conscious of Krishna, we can begin to perceive Krishna. And then as one moves out of the material conception into the transcendental conception, one will pass into Brahma, personal Brahma, the Jyoti, and then the localized Paramatma feature, and then the Bhagavan feature, personality of God in himself. And these are described as advayam, they are not different from one another. And Prabhupada gives a very apt example of approaching a mountain from a distance. From a far, far distance, one sees a great mountain on the horizon, particularly that type of mountain. There's some mountains which almost are standing alone. There's not other, many other, you know, maybe some small hills around them, but tremendous mountains standing alone. So from a far, far distance, when there are clouds, we may not even understand at first that it's a mountain. It may just look like, you know, a shape within the clouds, just another big cloud. But then as we get closer, we can discern the difference. Oh, that is a solid, massive shape. And the clouds are ephemeral. They're being blown by the wind. That is remaining. But it is just a kind, still a kind of, you know, dark outline. You don't see any pictures. So this is like discerning Brahman. First of all, there's the material energy, as I said, Mahabrahma. But then gradually we start to see, but behind that, there is something that persists. This is like the transition from Buddhism to Advaita Vedanta. The Buddhists say, everything is Maya only. Everything is temporary, everything is in flux. Their symbol is this wheel of 12 spokes, which are the 12 aspects of their philosophy of Maya. They've divided Maya up into the 12 ayurvedas. And they say just this big wheel is turning, and that's all there is. Maya in 12 divisions. And that's all that's going on. And there's nothing more. So when you attain nirvana, you just come to nothingness. The absence of matter, but nothing positive. But then Shankaracharya came to say, no, there is something positive beyond that. Something which is always there, which is not coming and going. And then as we get closer to the mountain, then we start to see waterfalls and forests and cliff sides and big boulders. We start to see creatures. So this is compared to Paramatma realization. And then when one goes on the mountain itself, actually on the side of it, then one is able to see that there are living beings here. There are even other human beings here. We have their homes, there are villages here, there are activities going on here. One enters into the world of that mountain. So this is the Bhagavan feature of realization. So it is not three different things. The way towards the mountain, that is one thing, always. But as we get closer, 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 we are realizing it more and more intimate features. Yes, so this is coming connected to Krishna. Sambandha means to be connected in these three features. And these three features also only indicate yogas. So the mystic, first of all, Jnana Yoga system will bring one into the Brahman feature. The Siddha Yoga, Mystic Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, Paramatma, meditation on Paramatma, will bring one into the second feature. But only Bhakti Yoga will bring one into the ultimate Bhagavan feature. And again, this is what Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching from the Yoga. So then from Bhakti Yoga perspective, as Prabhupada always said, the other two features are included. But if one goes only as far as Brahman, then Paramatma, Bhagavan are not there, not to be realized. Or Paramatma, so you know Brahman and Paramatma, but not yet Paramatma. Then the next, from Sambandha becoming connected to Krishna, then the function. And that function is expressed in the Bhagavatam, in terms of the Bhagavatam, in terms of this Bhagavata Seva that we spoke about in the beginning. This verse, Nigama Kalpa Toror Galitam Palam, which is describing the Srimad Bhagavatam as the ripened fruit. Think of a mango, the tree of the Vedas. Kalpataru, it's a desire tree. As I said in the beginning, a vast, vast encyclopedia of texts and whatever knowledge the human being wants is there, is coming from that tree. But finally there is this one supreme, sublime, most tasty fruit of all. Like the best of mangoes ripening on a tree. And that is this Srimad Bhagavatam. And as sweet as that fruit is, Sukhamukha Amrita Dravya Samyuktam. Because Sukadeva Goswami, with his own Rasa Dhyan, his own realization of Rasa. He speaks this Bhagavatam, it becomes even speechful. Compared to a parrot, in India they believe if a parrot touches a mango with its beak, then the sweet mango will even become sweeter. So then, Pibhakta Bhagavatam, Rasayana Alayam, that we are invited, Pibhakta means come and drink. This storehouse, aligned with storehouse of nectar. Everyone is invited to come and drink this nectar. In this way, Muhur Aho Rasa Rasika Bhuvi Bhavukha. If one gains taste, one has a taste for the nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam, and one gains that taste by this very process, then one comes to the level of Rasika Bhakti. One enters into the mellows of love of Godhead. So this is the avidya, this is the process of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the same thing, just to hear, just to drink this nectar that is being offered. And this way one will become qualified to achieve the prayojan. Prayojan is the culmination of the process, the goal, the end. And that is nicely expressed. There's one verse that often gets quoted to illustrate this prayojan. This is Sutin Amare Sutin Itare. This verse begins. It's describing the efforts of others who are also trying to attain transcendence, transcendental knowledge through Shastra, but not the Bhagavata Shastra. So, Shuktim, Apare, Smritim, Itare, this is referring to Shuktis and Smriti Shastras, like the four Vedas and other Puranas, Mahabharata, Ramayana. So, there are those who study the Shastra, and what is their motivation. Bhava Gita, the verse says. They're afraid of material existence. They want liberation. They want to get out of this material existence. Therefore, they have taken shelter of these different Vedic scriptures. But then the verse goes on to say, but as far as I am concerned, I am simply worshipping Nanda Maharaj. And why is that? Yaja Linde Param Brahma. Because the Supreme Brahman that these other things, Jnanis and so on, are trying to attain, that Supreme Brahman is playing in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. So they're worshipping Shruti and Smriti, they're going through all the various vidis of these scriptures to attain liberation, but I don't care about that. As for me, it's enough to worship Nanda Maharaj. Now this is wonderful because it's really bringing us back full circle and really making clear to us what the essence of the Bhagavad Dharma is. Because Nanda Maharaj, he's the devotee of the Lord. He is Bhagavata. He is Mahabhagavata. So one can only get Krishna from the devotee. And this is what Srimad Bhagavatam, this is what Srimad Bhagavatam is all about. Srimad Bhagavatam is presenting Krishna to us, but always through the devotee. First of all, the Shukadeva Goswami, but then we go into other narratives for other pure devotees of the Lord are speaking their realizations of Krishna. And as one is going through the canto by canto by canto, the nectarian quality of these realizations are becoming richer and richer and richer and richer until we finally come to the 10th canto. So all of this is made tasteable to us. This is again sukam bhukad amrita dravya samyukta. It becomes nectarian, it becomes tasteable for us in the first place because it's coming from the mouth of Shukadeva Goswami. And it's coming down parampara to this very day from Shukadeva Goswami. So this is really the essence. We want to know what is the Bhagavad Dharma. It's the Dharma of the Bhagavatas. The religion of worshipping the devotees of the Lord. Taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord. So that we can become qualified to taste this nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam. This brings us right back to Nityam Bhagavata Seva verse. Nasta Vraishu Bhagavata Seva means serving the pure devotee of the Lord who preaches Srimad Bhagavatam. By serving him, of course, we are serving that Srimad Bhagavatam. Going to class and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. A realized soul. And this is how we get the Bhagavatam. This is how it enters our heart. So this is this last verse, which is expressing the Prayojan. Yes, the Param Brahma is Supreme Brahman. How is he to be seen? Yes, Yalinde Param Brahma. He is in the courtyard of Brahma. So that is the Prayojan, to go to attain the Vrindavan, that place Nanda Maharaj, Mani Yashoda, the residence of Sri Vrindavan Dham. And this is all through the Bhagavad process, by the mercy of the devotees of the Lord. This is how the real Bhagavatam manifests. A line of pure devotees. So, Hare Krishna. That is the third item.
The most is called
Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam. Any questions on that?
Yes? Guru Maharaj, in one sense, some kind of their prayers and their activities or because maybe that in all activities there is one in one level some kind of their prayers and all
that. It's in potential. We are, you know, if you are a sadhana, if you are a sadhaka, engaged in sadhana bhakti, then that is the prayojan bhakti. Sadhana means practice. It is not yet bhavideya. Bhavideya means the real thing. It's like, you know, you have a license to drive a car. So you can get it, you can drive the car. But if you are a sadhaka, in learning to drive, you cannot do that. You can drive as long as the teacher is there with you in that special car with the blue L on top. You can drive around in that. But that's practice driving. So the avidya is attained when you have the license. And that means on that Mishta platform. Naishtiki Bhakti platform. When one comes to that platform, one has graduated out of the anartas, the anartha stage. After the Vritti, then you come to Nishtha. Then you can start to drive. So as long as we're, and we're always supposed to, this is Mahaprabhu's injunction on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that as long as you have a body, material body, then you should act as a sadhaka. In one's heart, bhava, you see, asakti, ruchi, asakti, bhava, prema, that will come. But as long as we have a material body, then we should act as sadhakas. And we are really sadhakas. So, yes, therefore, this sambandha jnana is very, extremely, I mean, you cannot minimize it. To hear it, I mean, some complain about this, but it is very, very necessary to hear repeatedly, we are not the body, we are spirit soul, that we should serve the Lord, chant His holy name, trying to avoid the offenses, learning the philosophy, the standard basic philosophy, three modes of material nature, the hierarchy of material elements, so on and so forth. This is very, very, very necessary to keep hearing this. It doesn't mean not to hear about Krishna's pastimes, but as Krishna, as Srila Prabhupada has presented Krishna, he presented all the pastimes, but in the context of sambandha jnana. So everything must be kept in that context, because that is our adhikara and context. And the thing is, if we show Krishna, this is the point, the higher stages are rewarded by Krishna. So if we show Krishna that we are serious devotees, or at least trying our best to be serious devotees on this sambandha platform, then by His grace one can come to higher stage. But this thing of, you know, struggling on the sambandha platform, never being able to get it together, and then just becoming frustrated with it, and then thinking, I want to go up to the upper platform. I'm sick of this sambandha. I want to go up. I need something better now. I need to be more inspired, because this is just too difficult for me. Well, then this is, you know, this is according to the process of this Prakriti Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has given this example of green mango. They take a green mango which isn't ripe and they beat it with a stick. So it becomes soft. It looks, you know, in a sense, you touch it, you may think it's ripe, but it's not ripe, and it never will become ripe. This is artificial. Out of frustration. They can't wait. Can't wait for the process to unfold in the natural manner. They have to try to create a bang, 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 bang. It's spoiled. But you see, the thing is, on the sambandha platform, sambandha jnana, one hears about avidya, one hears about prayojana also. So in this way, and then this is the how the raga marg works. Actually, that's an important thing. Something more to say about this last point I was making about Krishna being in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, Param Brahma there, as the property of the pure devotee. This is the raga marga method. We get Krishna from the devotees who have Krishna, the ragatmika devotees. So this raga, this desire to more and more come into the association of such devotees, them, be like them, learn from them so that we can be like them. Raga is developed by hearing. And this is what we are especially doing on the Sampanna Pyam platform. Hearing. And as you know, by the hearing process, one becomes purified. As one becomes purified, one becomes qualified. As one becomes qualified, then one deserves. I said, first deserve, then desire. So, first, as you become qualified, one deserves, and as one deserves, then one becomes desire. Or that pure desire, then it appears in part. And this is all by the grace of them.
I don't fully understand the difference between Sambandha and Anandeya. Because, for example, you have hearing as part of Sambandha. Then again, one could say it's part of Anandeya.
Yeah. Well, yes, but the difference is that Sambandha, we are hearing to become connected to Krishna in just a fundamental manner, you see. Therefore, this Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, hearing like this. And so it is practice. It is practice hearing. So there is sadhana bhakti, and then, because in nectar devotion, Rupa Goswami says there are three levels of bhakti. Sadhana, bhava, and prayatna. So the first two pertain to our existence here. Prema bhakti is the bhakti in the spiritual world. So sadhana bhakti is the bhakti that is rendered by those devotees who are not liberated. That means that they, you know, if their sadhana, if their following the vidhi is interrupted, they will fall down. You see? As soon as they neglect the vidhi, they fall down. Whereas Baba Bhakti, this is a liberated devotee. He doesn't have to follow that. But as I said, Mahaprabhu says he will, because he's setting the example for others, but he himself doesn't have to. So he may neglect some item of devotional service for some reason or other. But his Krishna consciousness is not touched. So that is the Abhideya platform. And Prema Bhakti, Prayojana. So these three correspond to these three. Anything else? Yes, please.
Sometimes I'm thinking that some people, they yourself, need some qualifications to be engaged in Bhagavata philosophy. That this is true that of the five items, this Bhagavata philosophy, there is some qualifications one must have in order to apply it for, in a sense, or is it for everybody also, that anybody can come and listen to Bhagavata philosophy? Or is there some qualification one must have?
Yeah, hearing is for everyone. Prabhupada said the whole point of this Krishna consciousness movement is to make an arrangement so that everybody can hear. But, you know, hearing can be just starting, can be just at the very beginning elementary stage, where the person, you know, like there's also these five stages of knowledge that Prabhupada speaks of. And the first stage is pratyaksha. Pratyaksha, then paroksha, then aparoksha, then adhoksaja, then aprapritya. So the first stage means one has come in touch with the devotees and the transcendental subject matter of Krishna consciousness, but his consciousness is on the pratyaksha stage. It means as far as what he knows or understands, well, he doesn't understand anything. He's hearing the class, but he doesn't know what it means at all. But the hearing is still good for him. That's already purified. And then if he engages, if he's on that protection platform, like I remember myself, the first time I went to a temple in Detroit in 1971, yes, fall of 1971, first time, I had never been to a Hare Krishna temple before. And they brought me into the evening aarti, 7 o'clock aarti. And they were worshipping Lord Jagannatha. I didn't, you know, I was seeing Lord Jagannatha, but I didn't see this bright, brilliant light of the altar and these big eyes looking at me. What is that? And then after the altar, they brought out this plant, you know, in a little pot. And everyone bowed down to this plant. They were ringing a bell and singing a song and then dancing around this plant. What is that? But I was seeing it, but just projection, you know, just sense perception, like an animal would see, you know, with no understanding at all. So the next stage, paroksha, means you have some rudimentary understanding. It's manifest as faith in authorities. You've been told this is Krishna. This, what looks to you like a odd-shaped wooden form with big eyes, this is God. So because you have faith in the devotee who has told you this, it is God. You kind of remove your objections. You trust them in the trash can of your head, you know. Fill it on it. I won't object to this. I've been told this is Krishna. So this is paroksha level. Tulsi Devi is pure devotee, eternal resident of the spiritual world, appearing in the form of a little plant. Oh, okay. So it's simply accepting authority. Then, aparoksha means intellectually and intuitionally, you start to have your own realization. You start to understand by experience of practicing this process that yes, actually, Lord Jagannath is Krishna. He is looking at me. And this is Tulsi Devi. This is the eternal devotee always at the Supreme Lord's lotus feet. You start to, and you're able at the aparoksha stage to explain this to others. This is the stage of realization. This is where the devotee becomes qualified to preach, to give classes. Not that he's seeing Krishna 24 hours a day, you know, Vasudeva in his heart, but he's become purified enough to have a deeper and spiritual perception into these subjects. Then Advoksaja is a level of actually understanding the energies of Krishna in this creation. Like the subjects of the Bhagavad Gita, there's Ishwara, there's Jiva, there's Prakriti, there's Kala, time and karma. So one is actually, this is very advanced, one is actually seeing Prakriti as the energy of the Lord. It says Srila Vyasadeva had this realization in the beginning. He could see the Lord, he could see himself, and he could see the material energy also. That's the energy of the Lord. She was embarrassed. She was kind of shy of hiding herself because her task is thankless. So he actually had darshan on this. So this is called the Advoksaja, because Advoksaja, Lord Advoksha, is the name of the Paramatma. Advoksaja, he pushes down by his manifest presence that knowledge which is born of aksha, means the eyes or the senses, pratyaksha. When one comes to the Advoksaja level, then one realizes that everything we've been assuming to be real in our sense perception is not real at all. It's a whole other. What is that? There was one book by Carlos Castaneda. A separate reality. That's that books do. The actual reality. But then there's even beyond that, that a book is in terms of this cosmic manifestation, but beyond that, a prakriti, having nothing whatsoever to do with prakriti, the spiritual world. So this, in my answer to your question is yes. Hearing is for everyone, but what may be coming in on this Pratyaksha platform? And it's purifying him to hear, but he has no understanding really. He isn't able to comprehend what he's hearing. He isn't able to put it together in a logical manner.
What to do with those persons, because sometimes they read Bhagavatam, lectures, and then they become doubtful and even offensive of the philosophy because of the misunderstanding or not understanding the philosophy. So what is the precaution to avoid these kind of situations in preaching Bhagavad philosophy?
Yes, well, there is a culture of Krishna consciousness. It's not just academic, it's not just attending classes and simply taking notes, filling up notebooks full of shorthand. There is a whole culture of Krishna consciousness. I mean, that's good to come in here and take notes, but if one doesn't go beyond that, that's like just satisfying the curiosity. Intellectual exercise, but this is a philosophy of life. So, ayurharki by pungsan, udhya nastam tuyana. So, there is a verse in the second canto telling us that those who do not take up this ayu, this life, this bhakti process, then they're wasting their life. So it is a horrible life. So that's why there's, this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, not only giving classes. If we just wanted to give classes, then we could simply rent a hall in town, come there and give lecture, and then disappear. Go back to Blackland somewhere. Where we have our secret ashram in a cave. Out in the middle of the woods. No one can find us. Appear once in a while to give a class. ISKCON isn't like that. ISKCON has temples, we have communities. So there is what they call a lifestyle sadhana, a practice. And so this is what is to be gained by this hearing, an association with devotees. And we need to encourage the people in that way. We need to set an example that they will be inclined to follow, they will be charmed by it and like to follow it themselves. But at the end of the day, still we should be confident that however they're taking it. I mean, there are some people, I've known them, they only want to hear and think of all kinds of difficult questions and ask these questions and see if this Swami answers the question the same way that Swami answers it. And they're always taking notes. And they never go beyond that, but that's also good. At least there's something. They're interacting with Krishna on some level. And so even if they may be a little bit difficult to get along with sometimes, you should be glad that they have this much attraction to Krishna. He said it's so much more than millions and millions and millions of people who are just being washed away by the mode of ignorance. They are somehow clinging some way to Lord Krishna's lotus feet. So they should be encouraged, I think. Prabhupada said, this movement is like a mental hospital. So the doctor has to learn to tolerate those who are doctors, those who are capable of preaching and helping others. Then for them, the quality of tolerance is very important in dealing with the patients. Anything else? So, Srila Prabhupada, he died.
He died.